Welcome to Ghost Writers Anonymous, an inspirational and interactive podcast where we create worlds through words and writing. I'm Kelsey, and today I'd like to know, if you were a suit in a deck of cards, what kind of suit would you be? I'm going to go traditional and say clubs.
When you said cars, I was thinking tarot.
And of course, I'm very accepting of any sort of suit.
This is Chandra. In a standard deck of cards, I would definitely be spades. In tarot, I would definitely be swords, which I think spades and swords are very similar.
I would agree with that, absolutely. I am most drawn to the wands in tarot.
I was gonna say it, but I was like, let Kelsey say it.
I love them, even though I am very much a pentacle.
I really do think that you are driven by your ideas and projects. Wands fit you best because you might be a pentacle grounded person, but what drives your mind, what drives your day is wands, inspiration, ideas, things that you can put your time and effort into to make something.
Yes. So spades and swords, what to you attracts them? I have always thought spades has this underlying, not insidious, but it can carry honor or evil easily, lending itself as a comparable suit to the sword. I forget what it is, but you can read tarot with a standard deck of cards and the suits trade over like that. I just don't remember what they are.
Yeah, and you just won't have the major arcana.
If I had to put the club to something, to me it would make sense to put it to a pentacle, like earth sign with a clover.
Hearts would be cups, and then diamonds would be wands.
It looks like a fleck, like a spark.
Yeah, I can see that. I said spades because I grew up playing spades.
And yes!
Also, very little pitch. I never liked pitch very much because it was too complicated for me. Too many points. I just wanted to win with spades. And so I've always seen spades as this high-ranking suit. Regal, but also mysterious and cold. Hard, like stone. My favorite card in the tarot deck is the Queen of Swords.
She is formidable.
Exactly, and that's what I love about her, because in my deck, she's got this purplish gown on, which is my favorite color, and she's sitting on this throne, laid back, and she's got this big sword, so nonchalant. Stony face, but also not concerned with what's going around her, and she just looks like a badass, and you're too afraid to approach her. That's what I strive to be. Constantly. But the reverse side of her is not always the nicest, kindest, or most giving. So it's a good reminder to not let that cold facade, that formidableness that you need in battle, take over your life. And that's why I like her, because it's both sides. I mean, that's with most cards, but because I like her so much, it's a good reminder that I need to remain compassionate and kind, even when I'm a stony exterior.
She is calculative and practical. Once I've made a decision, that is it. Follow through is like charge, and just like we have a yin and yang to ourselves, so do those tarot cards. They have the yin and the yang, the reversed and the upright meanings. To me, that is what makes them so relatable. We're not going to be this positive, inspiring thing every day of our lives. We do have a negative side to ourselves. Some days that's your mentality. And yeah. I don't think that's wrong.
Well, and even some cards upright are terrible. You need them reversed. And there's even some cards that upright or reversed is still not so great. I always like to think of the tower. Even reversed, the tower is better than upright, but
I think in the moment it's not great because it is a call to action. You are at a point of no return. It's here.
Yeah. You know, catalyst event is gonna be big. You are gonna have to realize that there is no going back, and I think that is what makes it such a negative and scary card to get, because people are forced with the realization. They don't get to gradually discover it themselves. It is hitting them in the face. Wake up. You can't go back. Get ready to go on this whole new journey. And the tower, because it is a catalyst card, it is the beginning of a new cycle.
Yes.
The end always leads to a new beginning, but it's hard to see that when there's fire and lightning coming down.
And new beginnings, new cycles can be very scary because you don't know what to predict. When a tower is there, it was an unplanned event. You were kind of forced into something. I like to think that there were hints along the way that were ignored.
Yeah.
And so that is, to me, the shaker card. We are grabbing both sides of your shoulders and shaking you, looking you in the eye, asking you, why did you do that? Why did you do that? It's one of those scenes unraveling. And they aren't bad. You know, sometimes if you look back on your life, you really needed, unfortunately, a tragic event to move you to where you are now. I mean, isn't that what we're doing always? Just moving on to the next thing that we were forced into, enduring?
Another chapter.
Yeah.
None of the cards are bad because it's all about what you see. They're just cards. I firmly believe that they're giving you a deeper understanding of what's already happening. And it's not a prediction of the future. It's using what is happening now to give you a foreshadowing for what could happen.
It is a way of mapping out what you're feeling. Some people want a journal. And to me, it's just another way of laying your feelings out to where they're no longer inside of yourself. They're outside of yourself.
Yeah.
So once you see it mapped out, you can begin to dissect it.
And well, and the cards can sometimes challenge you to recognize something that you don't want to.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's the Lover's card. What does that mean? Is that good? Is that bad? Infidelity?
Not always. It is an indicator of someone having to make a choice between something tempting and something more secure. You know, there's this old wives' tale or a theory that a tarot deck should be gifted to you, which I don't necessarily agree with, even though all of the ones that I have were gifted to me from people who knew me very well. In that sense, it seems allowable to me because I feel like your tarot deck is an extension of you. It's very personal to you, so you would want to pick that out, I would think. But also, what's so wrong with gifting yourself?
Exactly. And you know, actually, I listened to several podcasts yesterday and today about tarot. I didn't get to finish his episode, but he was going through all of the cups, ace through 10, and explaining what the picture looked like, what the upright and reverse meant, and things that he had learned in his journey with tarot.
And it's nice to talk to people that do tarot. There's readings that Max does. She has a different perspective that I never would have thought of. And so it's nice to have that. Although sometimes I feel like when you have so many, it's confusing because everyone has such a different way of explaining something.
Yeah, the guy was talking about how some people see this card this way and some people kind of see it more this way. You read it with your own intuition. So it makes sense for you to get your own. Mm-hmm. You can find something that you like, something that appeals to you, especially mm-hmm. artwork.
The portraits. That was my first attraction, the aesthetic appeal. Our topic was not tarot decks.
So I mean, we can make it tarot decks if you want.
Yeah, we may as well at this point. We could do a tarot episode sometime though.
Yeah, so we're talking about Valkyries today because I have a very cute, ferocious, destructive 4-month-old puppy who is half German Shepherd, half Belgian Malinois, and her name is Valkyrie. Before I met her, I was thinking of names, and I was thinking of something Norse. When I met her, of course, that was the end. Valkyrie. What better thing to name her than these warrior women who were sometimes seen as sexy and kind, but also sometimes bloodthirsty?
In your research, are they ethereal beings? Are they physical beings? Or do they ride both dimensions?
That's actually a really good question. Most people know that they were sent to the battlefield to pick up the dead soldiers and take them to Valhalla for Odin. They could either be human women or what they call Jotnar. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but that's the Norse word for giants. So pretty much ethereal beings in the different planes, Asgard, Midgard, Hel. They didn't have to necessarily be human for Midgard.
Now we're getting to something because I had seen 2 movies in theater. I keep wanting to say Norsemen, but it's Northmen.
Yeah, so I have not seen that movie. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a dark, gory.
It does start out very gory. It really plays to the realism of the time. And then it arcs into a more spiritual side, traditions and beliefs, which I was invested in. There are 2 scenes, one in particular, a Valkyrie scene. It was so cool to watch on the big screen that I cried. My eyes got wet, my nose got tickly, and I was just overcome with emotion. And so your body's like, let's shed a few tears to release some of this emotion because we're on amped up mode. That's how I felt about it. There was another, now that you're talking about how a Valkyrie could be a giant, there was a scene in The Green Knight of these giants walking in this misted space. And it seemed like a scene that didn't make sense. This movie was was so symbolic that it had to mean something, but now I know it was tipping its hat to Valkyries and moving from a tangible space to a metaphysical space. That whole movie is about a spiritual cycle, death, rebirth. You've sealed that loose end up for me.
Yeah. Giants is the English interpretation of that word, so they may not have necessarily been what we believe to be giants, but Loki is from the Frost Giants, if I am not mistaken. And he is always depicted as being the same size as everybody else, so who knows with that. But breaking down Valkyries, what does the word mean? Val, V-A-L, means dead body on a battlefield, and the Cree part means chosen. Together, it's commonly known as chooser of the slain or fallen.
I love that, but now it changes my feelings on Val as a pet name.
Dead body on a battlefield.
It's almost a threat at that point. It's not a pet name.
Yeah. It could be a human woman or it could be a Jotnar. They were chosen by Odin. So there is a little bit of a misconception that Freya runs the Valkyries, but I commonly saw that they all pretty much work for Odin. Some people believe that Freya runs the Valkyries, but they're chosen by Odin and they do their bidding for Odin.
Are there two worlds that they can go to? Valhalla or another one that Freya has to deal with? What are they and what's the difference?
The whole thing is that Valkyries go to the battlefield and they choose of the fallen, of the slain, who goes to Valhalla. But when they take the chosen, they go to Asgard, which is where the gods reside. That's their world. Then Freya gets to choose half. And she takes them to Freya's heaven, also known as Folkvangr. It's described as a meadow.
It reminds me of the Elysian Fields.
I think that's what it's based off of.
It's weird how beliefs all seem to meld into the same thing.
Yes, I know, right? So she gets pretty much first dibs. When she goes to war, she's picking these people to fight for her later.
My first thought was one must be better than the other, but I guess one doesn't have to be better than the other. They're just two different worlds.
Yeah.
So when she's picking you for this, is it they seem like they would really enjoy the field versus Valhalla? Which, what is Valhalla?
Pretty much Odin's heaven. That's where they wanted to go if you were a warrior, because you would be served by the Valkyries. Not only would they pluck you from the battlefield and take you to Valhalla, where it's pretty much an endless party constantly, you have these beautiful warrior women serving you drink and food.
It's like a brothel.
Yeah, pretty much.
I want to go to the fields.
Freya and Odin don't necessarily get along. Odin killed a lot of Freya's family. Also, they're married to save her people because he killed a lot of them. I listened to a mythology podcast about Ragnarok where Freya is depicted as very promiscuous. She has sex with a lot of people, including her own brother. She tries to kill Loki because he killed her son. Odin doesn't want to punish Loki because he knows that killing Loki or trying to kill Loki will start Ragnarok, which is the end of the world. But I also learned, which something I didn't know, is once Ragnarok happens, everything starts over again.
For whatever reason, I'm thinking of some sort of Muppet Sesame Street thing, Raggle Rock or something. But Ragnarok, so it's the end, like the second coming of Christ?
It's the end. But it can be different each time. Some people don't remember when it starts over.
Your personal Ragnarok, when you die, or the end of the world? When I think of the second coming of Christ, Revelations, it's the end of this world entirely.
It's that.
It's that. Okay.
It's that. There's, I think, seven worlds, if I remember correct. Asgard, which is where the gods live. Midgard, which is Earth. There's Hel, which is cold. It's a wasteland. And the lady who presides over it, she is wicked. I don't want to say she's evil, but she definitely holds a grudge against Odin and she plays her own trick against Odin.
When I think of my mind being in a hellscape, I think of desolation, loneliness, barren. There's beauty to that. Tundras and deserts. I love that landscape. One of my favorite quotes in Star Wars when C-3PO says, "My, what a desolate place this is," as he's looking around this desertscape of Tatooine. It's just fun to me to hear about all these interpretations of something that frankly we study all about in our spirituality, but no one knows. And that's what I love about it, is it's all conjecture. There is no certainty, and that is exciting to me.
And for people like me who like certainty, because I hate not knowing the answer, it can be scary and also very conflicting when you do learn about other ideas of spirituality. But there's all these worlds, and Ragnarok is the destruction of all of it. In the movie Thor, the one where Ragnarok happens and Asgard is destroyed. And there's actually a Valkyrie.
Fraggle Rock. I think I'm thinking of Fraggle Rock. Did you ever hear about that?
No. The lady who plays the Valkyrie is Tessa Thompson. They paint this picture of her as a total badass warrior. She tells it how it is. She hits hard. She can take a hit and she doesn't need Thor. Who cares if he's the god of thunder? And I love that in her because she's very confident. I don't care if you're a god. I can handle it. That's one of my favorite depictions of Valkyries. They usually are riding some kind of mount. Horses, wolves, or boars.
Oh my god, you can ride your horse. I'll ride my wolf. He would be reddish gray. Chandra has this very focused outline and I am swatting it away.
I wrote it down, Kelsey.
Someone gifted me a puzzle of a prince riding a wolf with this swooning maiden. Love that puzzle.
I mean, who wouldn't want to ride a wolf? You don't need a bed anymore. You just sleep on the wolf.
Definitively moving on.
Yeah. A lot of people think of Valkyries. They see those pictures of golden haired women with flowing dresses and they're up in the clouds coming down to this wounded man on the battlefield. And for the most part, they're associated with fairness, brightness, gold, but also bloodshed. Because if you think about it, the only time they show up is when there's a battle. There is a really fun poem. I forgot the name of it. I didn't write it down, but it's something I could not pronounce. It's talking about how Valkyries choose people who have fallen, but they might also have a part in who dies. They can use magic to sway the outcomes, or they'll pick who dies.
They're kind of bitches.
I don't like that guy. Looked at me weird.
Mixed feelings about that.
My favorite part of that poem describes 12 Valkyries at a loom, weaving this tragic battlefield bloodshed. The strings of their loom are intestines, and the weights holding the fabric down are heads. Their shuttleboards are swords and shields.
Kind of dig it.
One poem described beholding a Valkyrie is compared to staring into a flame.
Love that.
I love that too, because when I think of fire, it's bright and it's passionate, uncontrolled, and it's powerful.
I think entrancing. Lost your senses.
But you're afraid to touch it because you don't want to get burned. I think that is a perfect description of my dog. They're sometimes described as more ethereal than physical because they're sometimes referred to as a helping spirit to Odin. But a lot of poems and a lot of sagas and epics are describing real physical Valkyries showing up.
I have never fought in a war. I've never been on a battlefield, but I believe a battlefield is a place of a lot of passion and a lot of soul release. So I think it's an easy idea to say that a Valkyrie could be a physical presence on a battlefield. There's a lot of human emotion, fear, anguish, death, despair, Zerker rage. I think when you have that much of a culmination of emotions, something like that would exist.
And that brings me to another point. I was reading in this article and they did a beautiful job, and I'm pretty sure it was on NorseMythology.org. Why would there be Valkyries in Norse mythology? Traditionally, it's a male-dominated thing. Men go to war. Men fight. There are instances they believe that women also went to fight.
I thought women and men had pretty equal leverage.
So they did, in that they could own businesses, land, divorce their husband. They had a lot of power back home to run things. They found a burial plot of a woman that they believed was a very high-ranking, well-respected warrior because of all the items that they found in her burial plots. Shield maidens are a thing.
If you're going to have lots of lore about a woman warrior, then you would have to have had women warriors, right?
Or at least be accepting of the fact of a woman being a warrior. A respected position to take the souls of slain warriors, that was the ultimate honor for them, was to die in battle and then to take care of them in Valhalla. That had to be a well-respected idea. And so that's what they were talking about in the article, is for that to be such a central myth, they had to respect women enough to put them in that role, because otherwise it'd be men, right?
It caters to the warrior, which I think of as a masculine thing, but then the nurturing, now that we've done the battle, we're going to take care of you, tend to you.
Absolutely.
So they seem very balanced in that masculine feminine perspective.
Taking their souls, reaping them from the battlefield, carrying them to Valhalla, guiding them to the afterlife. They were also seen as meddlers, taking lives, choosing who lived or died on the battlefield, giving them this real scary power. If you were a warrior on the battlefield and you're like, well, I hope the Valkyries like us because they're going to kill us. That omnipotent power on the battlefield, and to give that kind of power to a woman, ethereal or not.
I talk about this with Cooper a lot, how history really is the same thing played over and over again. So the problems we're having today are the same problems that they had then. And so I feel like there was probably a divide of mentality like there is today. What a woman is, what a woman should be, everyone has their own opinion on it. So I'm sure they also had their own opinion on it.
Yeah.
And the only thing we know is what was expressed in writing.
But I think it's also important to note the other women in Norse mythology are really powerful. Freya is the mother of magic. She taught magic to a lot of the other gods. And even though she was depicted as promiscuous, I think that was a way of trying to take away her power, take away some of her reputation, her respect. Whether she was or not, it doesn't matter. But I think it was put into light to harm her. She was independent, outgoing. If she wanted to have sex with a dwarf, she was going to have sex with a dwarf. She's described as Odin's equal. And then Hel, people that go there are the people who die from illness or disease. This woman takes care of this realm, and people are afraid of her because it's an afterlife that you don't want. All of these women are in these really powerful positions that these people thought about and they revered because of their power. That makes me believe that the culture, the overall thought of women, is that they are powerful in their own right. They may not have been seen as equal as a man, but seen with respect.
Equal as a man, you're comparing two different things. Can you really compare them? It's so difficult. We're still trying to do it today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there were varying versions and ideas of the same concept. Think of how many different versions of Christianity there are out there. Some are very oppressive, some aren't.
I mean, I know there's denominations out there that believe it's a sin to sing worship music to God with instruments.
Yeah, there's all these technical nuances that, depending on whatever tribe you were in, there was maybe more disciplined belief. You know, I'd be curious to hear about that, but again, we'll just never know that.
It's too far in the past.
But we can apply that same thing to what we're going through now of, foundationally, you have the same religion with very different ways of practice that had to have existed there too.
I'm not an expert. The snippets that I have give me an impression, and that's really just what I'm going for when I say these things.
Well, it's how you translated it.
From what I do know, because I have looked into a lot of Viking clothing, I like to make for like Ren fairs and stuff. I think it's the Birk woman or something like that. The woman that they found, it's a burial plot with two horses and a chariot, arrows, bows, swords, shields, and she was laid out like a warrior. She was misgendered for several years. They thought she was a man. It was a abnormal female burial plot, but when they looked further at her bones, she was a woman. With the amount of stuff that she was found with, specifically weapons, not tools, not a loom or homemaking things, it was military stuff, that showed that she was well respected in a military setting.
As a kid, I remember watching the Discovery Channel, History Channel, and I really liked when they would do episodes where they would uncover a skull and then they would add the facial structure and the musculature, the skin. And I just love watching a skull be put together through computer programming to an actual recognizable face.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time, probably unhealthy amount of times. When I die and my skull is just laying somewhere, and if it ever becomes unearthed, would someone ever try to construct it? And if so, would the likeness be the same? I'm just deeply interested in that.
She's titled the Birka Woman, buried with the accoutrements of an elite professional Viking warrior in a 10th century chamber grave in Birka, Sweden. Because it was always known that Viking women had more rights. Some people made the connection that they could also fight, but it wasn't necessarily always an accepted theory. So much so that they misgendered a skeleton. Because surely if she's leading this group of people, there are women fighting with her. Because when a woman is in a position of power like that, that women normally aren't in, other women flock because it is encouraging.
I am laughing to myself about the phrasing of a skeleton carrying gender. Because I think of a skeleton as having anonymity, but also you can tell in the skeleton, male or female, the pubis, the widening of the hips, and there's certain indicators there, the ribs. But I just love, even unto death, you're still bare bones, a man or a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought you wanted to do some names.
Yes,
or something.
And these are going to be the name and then the meaning of the word. Christ, shake, Mist, Skiggled, X-Age, Skogul, Projector, Hildr, Battle, Thrud, Supernatural Strength, Chalak, Cry of an Eagle.
Love that.
I wish I could pronounce it right, because yes, I love that.
Scream!
Herfjotr, War Fetter, War Chain, War Wife. She has three different meanings. Skuld, Should, Sigrun, Victory Rune, Victory Mystery, Brynhildr, Armor Warrior.
Which reminds me of the German Brunhilde.
Yes. The Germanic people and culture meshed finally into Norway, Sweden. This one I love. Sigurdrifa, which is Victory Driver, who makes it happen. She pretty much makes victories happen.
I really like the eagle's cry. I've always had a love affair with sounds, and I like onomatopoeias, like sizzle.
Valkyries were doing their own thing.
True to themselves. Opinions be damned. There's an unreachable confidence to that. As a mortal human being, I feel like you always have an element of guilt or people-pleasing to you. And I think it speaks to their ethereal nature to be truly untouched. I am so unapologetically this.
One of these other ones that I had seen before, but it wasn't on this list, is Ear, which means peace or mercy. And she is associated with medical proficiency. So she was the medic of the group. This one means spear flinger. Gyedrafu, the one with the war fetter, war chain, war wife. Herfjotr?
Now, I'm a little confused by that. Fetter, I think of as clasp and chain, and she's your wife. So is she like your ball and chain?
She's your war wife.
But why is it fetter?
So it's like a partner.
Oh, now we're getting to it. Okay.
One of the most powerful Valkyries is Randgrid, the shield destroyer. So there's approximately 39 Valkyrie names that we know of. Oh, and a fun fact, Odin always sent them in threes. 3, 6, 9, or multiplications of threes.
What is it? 3, 6, 9. You're so fine. Get low.
They're described as similar to the Norns, which are the fates in Norse mythology.
I thought that when you're talking about the clacking and the shuttles of
the
dead.
Loom. They're putting it together before it happens. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're foretelling it.
Well, I think it was very appropriate that you went first because you really did the legwork for setting me up for mine.
And your giant book.
Yes.
Shelby, if you're listening, don't listen anymore because she's reading this series.
From the podcast or yes. Just?
Yeah, because of you.
Thank God.
She said she wasn't really going to do it, but then she heard you talking about it. She's like, well, I better give it a go.
I was quite committed. 5 books. I mean, I spent a lot of time reading. We just happened to start the podcast in the midst of it. So once again, we're visiting A Court of Silver Flames by Sarah J. Maas, book 5 in the A Court of Thorns and Roses series. We'll be meeting 3 women who are training to be warriors. And it was sort of an unconventional thing. Nesta, Gwyn, and Emery. And their trainer is Cassian. He is an Illyrian male. Illyrians are winged war people. Gwyn and Nesta work almost like a community service job in a library. Gwyn is working under a woman, Meryl, who is compiling what little information, written information, there is about Valkyries. Gwyn is also training, and so naturally they reach this conclusion of why don't we just try to be Valkyries? And this is sort of a montage of scenes lending itself to that idea, being a woman warrior. And the thing about these 3 women, they are changing their minds and their bodies to be stronger, because they were put in a position where they felt helpless. And so it's a really good spiritual sisterhood journey for them that was unplanned. And that is a big focal point of this novel. Nesta threw Gwyn a wicked smile. This was shelved improperly. I swapped it with the right book. What's Meryl researching anyway? Gwyn frowned. Lots of things. Meryl's brilliant. Horrible, but brilliant. She's writing a comprehensive history of the Valkyries. The who? A clan of female warriors from another territory. They were better fighters than the Illyrians, even. The Valkyrie name was just a title, though. They weren't a race like the Illyrians. They hailed from every type of fae, usually recruited from birth or early childhood. They had 3 stages of training, novice, blade, and finally, Valkyrie. To become one was the highest honor in their land. Their territory is gone now, subsumed into others. And the Valkyries are gone too? Yes, Gwyn sighed. Valkyries existed for millennia, but the war, the one 500 years ago, wiped out most of them, and the few survivors were elderly enough to quickly fade into old age and die afterward. The Valkyrie history and training were mostly oral, so any accounts we have are through whatever passing historians or philosophers or tradespeople wrote down. It's just bits and pieces scattered in various books. No primary sources beyond a few precious scrolls. Meryl got it into her head years ago to begin compiling all of it into one volume, their history and their training techniques. So that is a good foundation leading into this training montage. These excerpts span throughout the novel. I hope I've seamlessly fitted them in. Gwyn let out a breathy laugh. I learned about a new Valkyrie technique last night. It's called mind stilling. They used it to steady their minds and emotions. Some of them did it 3 or 4 times a day, but it's basically the act of sitting and letting your mind go quiet. Nesta paused. Such a thing is possible? To train the mind? Gwyn's teasing smile turned contemplative. Well, yes, it requires constant practice, but there's a whole chapter in this book I summarized for Meryl about how they did it. It involved deep breathing and becoming aware of one's body, then learning to let go. They used it to remain calm in the face of their fears, to settle themselves after a hard battle, and to fight whatever inner demons they possessed. The Valkyries found heightened emotions distracting in the face of an opponent. They trained their minds to be weapons as sharp as any blade, to be able to keep their composure, to know how to access that place of calm in the midst of battle. It made them unshakable opponents. Nesta's heart pounded with every word, quieting her mind. Can you get a scribe to make copies of the chapter? Gwyn grinned. I already did. I think the Valkyries were even more sadistic than the Illyrians, Gwyn grunted, and Nesta could see the priestess's legs shaking as she held the pose that had been illustrated in one of her many research volumes. No amount of mind-stilling will get me through these exercises. What was that phrase they used? I am the rock against which the surf crashes? A rock never had to hold a lunge, though. This is outrageous. Emery agreed, teeth gritted. Cassian idly flipped a long dagger in his hand. I warned you that they were stone-cold warriors. Nesta panted through her teeth in a steady rhythm. My legs might break. You still have 20 seconds. Cassian looked to the clock. Nesta's legs wobbled and burned, but she rooted her strength through her toes, focusing on her breathing, her breathing, her breathing, as the mind-stilling had bade her to do. She sought that place of calm where she might be beyond her thoughts of pain and her shaking body, and it was so close, so near. If she could just concentrate, breathe more deeply. Time, Cassian declared, and the three of them collapsed onto the dirt. He laughed. Pathetic. You try it, Gwyn panted, lying prone on the earth. I don't think even you could survive it. Thanks to the passages you sent me last night, I was here at dawn doing the exercises myself. I figured if I'm going to torture you three, I should at least be able to back it up. He winked. For exactly the moment when you growl that I should suffer alongside you. No wonder you look like that, Emery muttered, turning over to lie on her back and gaze at the crisp autumn sky. And then our final passage, which I think wraps it all together. They tried out 2 new Valkyrie techniques that Gwyn had found the night before, and both had been particularly brutal, ordering them to use shields as springboards for launching a fellow Valkyrie into the skies and to do their abdominal curls bearing the weights of those shields. Gwyn beamed. I convinced Meryl to add us into the penultimate chapter. She even let me write it, with her own annotations, of course. But it's about the rebirth of the Valkyries, about what we're doing. Nesta read a line at random on the 5th page. Whether the sun beat hot on their brows or freezing rain turned their bones to ice, Nesta, Emery, and Gwyneth arrived at practice each morning. What I liked about all of those is the discipline that these girls put themselves into. Nesta, this was an ultimatum for her. She had no interest in ever exercising or training. It became this thing that she needed. It was a release for her in more ways than she realized. And it's neat to watch her transformation. This entire novel is about her transformation, and it's a motivating journey. It was such a cool thing for me to read. It actually made me hold this book in high regard Guard is probably my favorite in this series. And I think it holds true to the Valkyrie being a warrior woman. They're training their bodies, but they're training their minds. I think that lends itself to the blend of the physical and metaphysical side of what people believe a Valkyrie to be.
I like how she used this timeless myth about Valkyries, and to become one, it was this huge, long process, but it was an honor. And anyone could be it if you put in everything that you had.
The Illyrians are these war people. They go through this whole ceremony. It's called the Blood Rite, which if you survive the Blood Rite, then you can survive war, essentially. That is a race of people. But then the Valkyries weren't a race of people. Anyone who put in the time could be one. I really liked that. And that's what these three women are. They're from very different walks of life, very different circumstances, and they are training together to become the same goal of Valkyrie, since their trainer is an Illyrian male. And one of the women, Emery, she is an Illyrian woman. I really won't get into her story since that's not the focal point of this, but they are informing Nesta and Gwyn the differences. The women decide that the Illyrians can do their thing, but they want to be a Valkyrie. They want to do something different. And the whole premise of this book is Nesta wants to pave her own way. She wants to make a name for herself. Her sister's doing one thing. She wants to do another. She wants to not be under her sister's shadow. And she does it.
And I mean, that's the whole point of the Valkyries in that book, is that you can pave your own way. You can reach this level for yourself. It's not a race. It's not a family. It's not a privilege. It's something that you yourself can prove.
Yes. And that's the reachability. It makes you as the reader feel like, I could do that too. I could start today. Whatever goal I want, baby step my way through it. And when you're seeing Nesta baby step, her progress isn't linear. You see her stumble and move back and fall, which is very real. You can train 3 days a week, 4 days a week, and then some days you just don't have it.
Yeah.
Whether that be mentally or physically. It's fun to read about. She just, as I've always said, does such a good job of fleshing out her characters that since I never do that in my writing, it inspires me to try to do that, to try to flesh out a character to more than just this wisp of a concept.
And I was having this conversation with someone the other day because it's very real for me, especially specifically healing is not a straight and narrow path. It's hills. It's a roller coaster. There's ups, there's downs. You're going to go backwards. You're going to go really far and then you'll fall right back again. And that's what I like about that book, is because when we read that excerpt about Nesta, we saw this linear relationship with the house, but Nesta still battling her own things.
And so the enchanted house is befriending her, gifting her this bouquet of flowers, these romance novels. The house was the beginning, giving her a hand to hold on to. And that was the first step of, okay, something believes in me. Now I believe in myself. I'm going to start being serious about this training that I was forced to do. I'm going to embrace it. And oh, I'm going to invite these other girls to do it. I think they need to heal too. It's about taking your power back, how a tragedy doesn't have to make you a victim. If that hadn't happened to them, they never would have been a Valkyrie, because they would never have been pushed to be better, faster, stronger than what they were.
Bad things happen, but you're making the most of it.
It made them flourish.
It's the kick from the caterpillar to the chrysalis. There's an end and then a new beginning. I think there's always something that we decide we're pruning. We are choosing to end something, and if we don't, that's what becomes rotted or begins to poison us, because we're not finding the finality in that cycle. I think that it correlates to New Year resolutions, because you're choosing to make a change. Well, I eat junk food all the time. I'm going to end that. That would be the end of a cycle.
I'm going to use the word wallow, even though it has a negative connotation. Once you're acquainted with that feeling, then you can make the choice to blossom.
Once you hit rock bottom, the only way is up. Rock bottom sucks, and it sucks to fall all the way down the ladder. That's the point where people have to muster up the strength, the energy, the drive to go back up, or they wallow.
I've seen it in myself, and I've seen it in others. Sometimes when you're already falling, you just want to spiral even further down, because once you're down there and there is no other direction than up, then you have no other choice. So when people are spiraling, I feel like instinctively or intuitively they know once they get to the bottom, great, it's almost a relief that they're there, because then they really only have up to go.
It's like a dumpster fire. Once it's on fire, you can either try to save it, but it's still full of trash, or just let it burn down to nothing and then you can start over. It's almost like a cleansing.
It is a cleansing, but it's like a clearer vision. This dumpster is fully engulfed. Let's try to put it out. There's there's a lot of danger in that. Whereas if we just let it burn all the way down, like when you burn a field so it can grow even better than what it was, some people need that definitive end.
Absolutely.
To do the definitive beginning. We are now officially at the lowest of the low. Now we can go up. And I don't think that's wrong. That's just a different way of doing it.
And I don't think some people allow it. I think some people feel powerless. They can't necessarily quote unquote stop it. The momentum is hard, but also the drive to stop it. Well, it couldn't get worse, and then it rains. You're almost asking for it to be worse.
And Nesta is doing that. She is creating these scenarios of, let's just see how far I can dig myself in this hole. It's so cool to read about because you feel like you're not alone.
Honestly, if I could be a mystical warrior woman, it would be a Valkyrie.
I don't think I'd be a warrior woman. That's not really me, but I would be a Wraith. Want to be one so bad.
She's dreaming of it.
I'm counting down the days to when I can just be one.
You only better come by on Halloween just to say hi.
Not just Halloween. I think that's maybe when it'd be easier to see me floating by.
I don't want to be haunted by a Wraith.
I wouldn't want to either, but I can't be haunted by one if I am one.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. That's true.
Technicality. Yeah. Acting like a crack addict at the front door.
No, she's an alcoholic. She didn't do anything else. The fact that she had to defend herself immediately when I opened the door told me that definitely wasn't just alcohol in her system.